Državni ispitni centar.
Maturità generale 2012.
Prova d'ascolto.
A tutti voi un cordiale saluto. Siamo all'inizio della prova d'ascolto d'inglese.
Questa prova d'esame si compone di due parti, la parte A e la parte B. Per ciascuna parte ascolterete un testo e risponderete poi a un esercizio che a esso si ricollega. Dapprima leggerete l'esercizio, poi ascolterete ciascun testo per due volte e risolverete l'esercizio durante l'ascolto. L'inizio e la fine del testo saranno indicati dal seguente segnale acustico.
Scrivete le vostre risposte negli spazi appositamente previsti all'interno della prova, utilizzando la penna stilografica o la penna a sfera. Scrivete in modo leggibile e ortograficamente corretto. In caso di errore, tracciate un segno sulla risposta scorretta e scrivete accanto ad essa quella corretta. Alle risposte e alle correzioni scritte in modo illeggibile verranno assegnati 0 punti.
Abbiate fiducia in voi stessi e nelle vostre capacità. Vi auguriamo buon lavoro.
Ascoltate con attenzione. Aprite la prova d'esame.
Section A. You will hear an interview with Amy Chua. You will hear the recording twice. Now read the task.
We're not far into 2011, but the award for controversial book of the year so far has to go to Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. Concerned parents, listen on. In case you've missed the reviews, it's by a Chinese-American academic at Yale, and it plots her tough mothering style of parenting, no TV, no sleepovers, hours of enforced practice each day on musical instruments. Well, some think the book is a welcome restatement of the need for ambitious parenting. Others have been more critical, thinking it reads like a satire, or even worse, as a description of child abuse. I spoke to the author, Amy Chua. Although she did try to play down the suggestion that Chinese immigrant parenting is somehow superior to the softy Western style, she did explain her thinking.
I was raised by extremely strict, but also extremely loving Chinese immigrant parents. My parents having high expectations for me, coupled with love, was the greatest gift that anybody's ever given me. So I tried to raise my own two daughters the same way that my parents raised me. And my book is about the many strengths that I see in this kind of tough immigrant parenting. The book is not about telling other people how to parent. It is not a how-to guide. I don't believe that Chinese parenting is superior. The book is just about my family's journey and in many ways about my own transformation as a mother.
Give us an example of the tough loving.
Well, just one example. I remember my daughter came back when she was 10, and she had done poorly on a math test. And she announced, "I hate math. I'm bad at math." Many Western parents might have sort of deferred to that choice. You know, okay, a lot of people aren't good at math. That's fine. But I went the sort of Chinese immigrant way. I made practice sheets. I drilled them with her with a stopwatch for a week. And the next test, she did very well. And guess what? She came back and said, "You know what? I like math." I write about something called the virtuous circle. You know, I wonder if the strict immigrant approach may, you know, if you combine it with love, may actually be better at producing self-esteem. Because, I mean, you can tell your child, "You're great, you're perfect, all you want." But at some point, they're going to have to go out into the real world. And, you know, when they don't do well at school or later can't get the job they want, I think that's when you really start to lose self-esteem.
Obviously, Chinese parents come in many different varieties, as do Western parents, so we're talking in broad generalizations here. But your basic point is that Western parents, they give up too easily and care too much about their children's feelings and consequently indulge the children's giving up at the first sign of difficulty in something.
Look, show me a kid who is confident and happy and self-reliant, and I would say that's good parenting. But I do think that there are a lot of strengths to this kind of tough immigrant parenting if you combine it with love and compassion. And in the end, at least the way I practice it, I don't think this kind of strict immigrant parenting is about A pluses and gold medals. I think it's about helping your child be the best they can be, which is usually better than they think.
It's treating your child like a prodigy rather than a failure and consequently holding them to a much higher standard. Because what would you do if your child came back with an A-? I think most parents would say, oh, very well done.
No, I don't do that. I say, you know, good job. Can I see what points you missed, you know, so that we can try to improve for next time? And, you know, I can tell you, it does not damage their self-esteem.
Now you will hear the recording again.
We're not far into 2011, but the award for controversial book of the year so far has to go to Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. Concerned parents, listen on. In case you've missed the reviews, it's by a Chinese-American academic at Yale, and it plots her tough mothering style of parenting. No TV, no sleepovers, hours of enforced practice each day on musical instruments. Well, some think the book is a welcome restatement of the need for ambitious parenting. Others have been more critical, thinking it reads like a satire, or even worse, as a description of child abuse. I spoke to the author, Amy Chua, although she did try to play down the suggestion that Chinese immigrant parenting is somehow superior to the softy Western style. She did explain her thinking.
I was raised by extremely strict but also extremely loving Chinese immigrant parents. My parents having high expectations for me, coupled with love, was the greatest gift that anybody's ever given me. So I tried to raise my own two daughters the same way that my parents raised me. And my book is about the many strengths that I see in this kind of tough immigrant parenting. The book is not about telling other people how to parent. It is not a how-to guide. I don't believe that Chinese parenting is superior. The book is just about my family's journey and in many ways about my own transformation as a mother.
Give us an example of the tough loving.
Just one example. I remember my daughter came back when she was 10, and she had done poorly on a math test. And she announced, I hate math, I'm bad at math. Many Western parents might have sort of deferred to that choice. You know, okay, a lot of people aren't good at math, that's fine. But I went the sort of Chinese immigrant way. I made practice sheets, I drilled them with her with a stopwatch for a week. And the next test, she did very well. And guess what? She came back and said, you know what? I like math. I write about something called the virtuous circle. You know, I wonder if the strict immigrant approach may, you know, if you combine it with love, may actually be better at producing self-esteem. Because, I mean, you can tell your child, you're great, you're perfect, all you want. But at some point, they're going to have to go out into the real world. And, you know, when they don't do well at school or later can't get the job they want, I think that's when you really start to lose self-esteem.
Obviously, Chinese parents come in many different varieties, as do Western parents, so we're talking in broad generalizations here. But your basic point is that Western parents, they give up too easily and care too much about their children's feelings and consequently indulge the children's giving up at the first sign of difficulty in something.
Look, show me a kid who is confident and happy and self-reliant, and I would say that's good parenting. But I do think that there are a lot of strengths to this kind of tough immigrant parenting if you combine it with love and compassion. And in the end, at least the way I practice it, I don't think this kind of strict immigrant parenting is about A pluses and gold medals. I think it's about helping your child be the best they can be, which is usually better than they think.
It's treating your child like a prodigy rather than a failure and consequently holding them to a much higher standard. Because what would you do if your child came back with an A-? I think most parents would say, oh, very well done.
No, I don't do that. I say, you know, good job. Can I see what points you missed, you know, so that we can try to improve for next time? And, you know, I can tell you, it does not damage their self-esteem.
This is the end of Section A. Section B. You will hear an interview about the film The Arctic Tale. You will hear the recording twice. Now read the task.
I'm Patty Kim, and I'm speaking with Adam Ravitch and Sarah Robertson, the makers of the new wildlife adventure film Arctic Tale, produced by National Geographic Films. Sarah, I think you've once said that filming in the Arctic is like guerrilla warfare. What did you mean by that?
Well, in the Arctic, you have really a big, flat, expansive white plain that goes for miles and miles. There's no trees. There's no, wood at all in which to build any kind of hideout or platform or blind. So you're totally exposed, and you're traveling because you're following, predators and large animals. So you constantly have to be on the move. So there's no base camp. You're moving all the time. We're in minus 40 degree temperatures most of the time. We're traveling on a frozen ocean that cracks and moves and, in fact, breathes and has a life of its own. So you constantly have to be aware of that. And it's just the harshness of the conditions of Arctic filmmaking is so extraordinary that you have to become prepared for anything. You're taking as little as possible. You have to be mobile.
I've heard really amazing stories about you, Sarah. You're pretty tough. You're made of some serious stuff, but where you'd be out there and you could wait for up to 19 hours at a time at some points, or
yeah,
is that true?
You have to stake out the shots where we were trying to film the bear going up into the walrus haul out to eat walrus. Well, we're waiting all day long, for weeks and weeks, for months and months, for this to happen. And you couldn't go to sleep. You never knew when it was going to happen. And so you had to be up all the time and be alert and waiting at the camera for it to happen.
What, for you, was the most powerful scene that you captured in the film, Sarah?
There's two scenes. There's one is I have to mention because it really has blown me away, is the devotion of the mother walrus to her calf. And we've seen so much example of her, saving the calf, doing everything, risking her life. It's extraordinary, extraordinary. I once saw a mother walrus holding up her walrus calf out of the water with her two flippers straight up in the air, lifting the walrus up so that it could breathe out of the water. It's just an amazing example of wonderful motherhood, mothering. The second wonderful scene, I think, is when the bear, the male bear, agrees to share his kill with the Sela, or sorry, Nanu bear.
The polar bear cub,
yeah. And this is really interesting because bears really are not communal and not social. And now I think they're being forced to become way more social and to help each other out and to share if they're going to survive. And I think it's a wonderful example of some of the adaptations that bears will need to go through.
Now you will hear the recording again.
I'm Patty Kim, and I'm speaking with Adam Ravage and Sarah Robertson, the makers of the new wildlife adventure film Arctic Tale, produced by National Geographic Films. Sarah, I think you've once said that filming in the Arctic is like guerrilla warfare. What did you mean by that?
Well, in the Arctic, you have really a big, flat expanse of white plain that goes for miles and miles. There's no trees. There's no, wood at all in which to build any kind of hideout or platform or blind. So you're totally exposed. And you're traveling because you're following, predators and large animals. So you constantly have to be on the move. So there's no base camp. You're moving all the time. We're in minus 40 degree temperatures most of the time. We're traveling on a frozen ocean that cracks and moves and, in fact, breathes and has a life of its own. So you constantly have to be aware of that. And it's just the harshness of the conditions of Arctic filmmaking is so extraordinary that you have to become prepared for anything. You're taking as little as possible. You have to be mobile.
I've heard really amazing stories about you, Sarah. You're pretty tough. You're made of some serious stuff, but where you'd be out there and you could wake for up to 19 hours at a time at some points, or
yeah,
is that true?
Oh, yeah. You have to stake out the shots where we were trying to film the bear going up into the walrus haulout to eat walrus. Well, we're waiting all day long for weeks and weeks, for months and months, for this to happen. And you couldn't go to sleep. You never knew when it was going to happen. And so you had to be up all the time and be alert and waiting at the camera for it to happen.
What, for you, was the most powerful scene that you captured in the film, Sarah?
There's two scenes. There's one is I have to mention because it's just, it really has blown me away, is the devotion of the mother walrus to her calf. And we've seen so much example of her, saving the calf, doing everything, risking her life. It's extraordinary, extraordinary. I once saw a mother walrus holding up her walrus calf out of the water with her two flippers straight up in the air, lifting the walrus up so that it could breathe out of the water. It's just an amazing example of wonderful motherhood, mothering. The second wonderful scene, I think, is when the bear, the male bear, agrees to share his kill with the Sela, or sorry, Nanu bear. Polar bear cub, yeah. And this is really interesting because bears really are not communal and not social. And now I think they're being forced to become way more social and to help each other out and to share if they're going to survive. And I think it's a wonderful example of some of the adaptations that bears will need to go through.
This is the end of section B.
Siamo alla conclusione della prova d'ascolto d'inglese. Smettete di scrivere, chiudete la prova d'esame e posatela sull'orlo del banco insieme alla scheda di valutazione.
Ancora un cordiale saluto.